Morning. For those of you that know me well, when asked to preach about the power of endurance, you are inevitably going to expect me to share in an experience of running endurance. And well, I hate to disappoint. I had in previous years taken part in a race event called Endure 24, where you can enter as teams of up to 8 people to do a 5-mile course in relay over, yes, 24 hours. But in 2019, one of my running colleagues and I agreed to do this as a pair. Essentially, 5-mile run, 40 to 50 minute break, another 5-mile run, 45 to 50 minute break, and so on. You get the gist. It seemed like a good idea at the time. I think we both said that you should always be prepared to do something a little crazy. And it was crazy. By the time we got about 20 hours in, we were close to having run 50 miles each, but this didn't tell the full story. By now, I was unable to run to the start line to take over the baton. I would shuffle one foot in front of the other until I had the baton, and then slowly try and turn the shuffle into a plod, trying to ignore the blisters, the sore parts of my body that I'd previously never known to exist. When I had an hour's rest, I would try to negotiate portaloos. Now, you would expect this to be an easy thing, but it entailed reversing into them because somehow that was less painful to lift my legs that way. It was at this particular moment when I questioned what the point of it all was. What was I gaining from this experience apart from pain? And you know, sometimes I'm sure we question in our lives what the point of it all is. When struggles and troubles close in on us from all sides. Now, I'm sure before in services you will remember I have quoted those fine philosophers, the Rembrandts, on more than one occasion. But there really are truly times when it hasn't been our day, our week, our month, or even our year. When we want it to stop, we feel on the edge of our ability to cope, and everything within us cries, enough is enough. Have you experienced any of the following? Every day beginning to be a grind. Every day another battle. Every day bringing more struggles and every day bringing more stress. Just when you think you're going to have some free time to relax, then you find yourself even more busy than before. And just when you think all the problems are gone, then a new one pops out of nowhere. That light at the end of the tunnel just turns out to be a high-speed train coming straight towards you. Do you know, I'll level with you. Despite my best efforts, I do get more out of shape every day. I'm often too busy to do anything but work. I worry about my work and my work team on a daily basis. I worry about the health of my aging mum. I frequently can't sleep because my mind won't stop racing with concerns about whether I actually have it within me to deal with the responsibilities on my shoulders. There's a tendency to cry out and ask for some release from the stresses, the strains and the challenges. How about you? Have you had enough? Have you had it with family problems? Are you just tired and worn out from the things you've had to deal with in the last few days, weeks, months or years? And let's be honest, most would be forgiven for this with the last year we've had. Are you sick of worrying about money so much? When will you be able to live comfortably? When will you be able to stop worrying about the bills? Have you been beaten up by tragedies, sicknesses, surgeries, deaths? Are you exhausted from battling those elements of your life where you know you haven't been your best? When will you kick that spiritual laziness? When will you beat that bad habit? Well, if nothing else this morning, please take heart that in Paul, God's own apostle, we have someone who would certainly empathise and sympathise with our situation. Look, I'm in no way trivialising my struggles and troubles. But wow, Paul endured so much. By the time he wrote his 2 letters to the Corinthians, which likely were sent only a few months apart, he had been through more than any of us could imagine. Let's just get a flavour of his struggles. In most cities, he was chased out of town and persecuted by the Jews. In Lystra, he was dragged out of the city and stoned. Now, let's pause and think about that for a moment. We are not talking about gravel being tossed at him. These would have been sizable stones and rocks. They were intended to crush his bones and his skull. In Philippi, he was stripped, beaten, and severely flogged. And flogging would not have just been with a normal whip, but with shards of bone and metal attached to the ends with the express purpose of tearing flesh apart. Up to this point, Paul had received the maximum 39 lashings 5 times. And if that wasn't enough, they then tossed him into prison there in Philippi. In Athens, he was laughed at by the brilliant philosophers of the city. And in Ephesus, the entire city broke into a riot over his preaching. Just before these words in chapter 12, Paul mentions that he was beaten with a rod 3 times. He was shipwrecked 3 times and once spent a whole day in open sea. At times he went hungry and unclothed. He had been threatened by his own people, by Gentiles, by bandits and more. When Paul shares with the Corinthians and offers wisdom about power through endurance, this is clearly a man who has not only talked the talk, but walked the walk. And if it's any assurance to us today, Paul said, enough is enough. In 2 Corinthians 12, we find out that Paul was given a thorn in his flesh. And it says, to keep me from being conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me. 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. Now, people still speculate today as to what the thorn in the flesh was. We know it was something he continually suffered from. We know it was used as a messenger, an obstacle supposed to hinder him in his preaching. Some have thought it to be recurring malaria. Perhaps it was arthritis from all the beatings. Others said it was poor eyesight. Whatever it was, it tormented him. And it tormented him to the point that he could only compare it to a thorn lodged in the flesh. And such was the discomfort or pain that he pleaded with the Lord to remove it. And I'm sure we too have been in those circumstances, in mental or physical health, in troubles with work, family relationships, temptations, where we said, Lord, remove this pain from me. Enough is enough. Now, it's clear from Paul's letters, he prayed continually. He brought all kinds of requests to God in prayer very frequently. But I get the impression this was a different kind of request. He begged, he beseeched, he called out, he pleaded. What might that prayer have sounded like? Lord, take this ailment away. Restore my health. Why have you let me suffer like this, Lord? I have endured so much. This thorn is hindering my preaching, Lord. Enough is enough. Now, if Paul had finished his letter at this point, the Corinthians would be none the better for his communication. Indeed, it may have been the point that made them want to walk away from it all. But we see that Paul begins to reflect upon his thoughts and prayers as he writes to the Corinthians. And he sounds like a man who has learned from his troubles. Or rather, he'd learned about his troubles. Listen again to that first line. To keep me from becoming conceited because of these surpassingly great revelations, there was given me a thorn in my flesh. Paul understood one of the reasons God allowed him to suffer, to keep him from being conceited. Do you know, it wouldn't have been hard for Paul to boast, to brag. He was one of the chosen people. He was an Israelite, a descendant of Abraham. He was trained as a Pharisee. Later, Jesus himself appeared to Paul and handpicked him to be an apostle. He'd seen visions, he'd received revelations from God. He was an inspired Bible writer. He wrote some of the most theological and beautiful and memorable words of the New Testament. How easily Paul could have boasted. How easily he could have looked down his nose at the insignificant and unimportant people of the world. But to keep him from being conceited, he was given this thorn in the flesh. A lesson learned? Have you ever been conceited before? Have you ever had that mentality? I've been a Christian my whole life. I've grown up with and known this stuff forever. I've been a member of this church for many, many years, and I know what's right for this church. I can't believe that person calls himself a Christian. I'm always better than that person. Can you believe what she did? How awful. I mean, I've got things wrapped up in my faith. Look at what I've accomplished. Look at what I've made. Look at what I've done. Have we ever said anything like that? Is there a thorn in your flesh right now with which God is humbling you and bringing you back to reality? Hey, maybe it's not conceit. Maybe the struggle is apathy. You might be saying, church is good, but I don't need to go all the time. You know, I try to read my Bible when I have time. I pray when I remember. You know, if I have money left after all the bills and fun stuff, then I'm going to give a little to the church. Has it been all too easy to press the fast forward button on YouTube in the last year? Or has it been all too easy to head to the garden rather than the online service? Could there be a thorn in your flesh right now with which God is reminding you of what's important in your life? Could God be using that thorn to teach you to reprioritize your life? You know, in his infinite wisdom, God knows just the right way to bring us back to reality. God knows just the right ways to give us wake-up calls. He knows just the right way to get us to stop worshipping ourselves and our own lives and to humble us and lead us to worship him. We might be saying enough is enough, but it is God who knows what is best and knows when we've had enough. The Apostle Paul knew that too, and we can have faith in that. You know, we might imagine there could have been a point in time where Paul would have still been quite frustrated. Let's be honest, after all, how often can one person be humbled? Perhaps in his pleading with the Lord, he could have prayed, Lord, I get it. I'm humbled now. I've been poor, I've been needy, I've been beaten, shipwrecked, flogged, and stoned. I can't see well, and I'm getting malaria. I get it, Lord. I'm humble, but now enough is enough. Whatever his prayers sounded like, Paul finally shares with us what God's response was in verse 9. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. God's answer, Paul, you have all that you need because you have my grace. Paul learned the really hard way that the most important thing in life is not physical health, family, friends, money, or Paul's skill in writing or his ability to preach and do mission work. The most important thing in Paul's life and in ours is God's undeserved love for him and for us. What an amazing revelation. That is the most important thing in our lives. God's undeserved love for us. God is such an amazing God. He is unlike any other God which other religions have made up. God is so different because he has shown his power in weakness. A baby lying in a manger? That doesn't look very powerful. A carpenter's son rejected by his own people? That doesn't look very powerful. A king riding on a donkey? That doesn't look powerful. A man beaten, bruised, mocked, spat upon, and dripping with blood. That doesn't look powerful. A saviour nailed to a cross and lying in a tomb. That does not look powerful. But God's power is made perfect in weakness. Jesus' humble life and death may have looked weak, yet there has never been anything more powerful than his life. Who else has lived a perfect life on behalf of everyone else? Who else has resisted temptation and sin? Who else has had to carry the sin of the world? Who else has gone toe-to-toe with Satan and won? Who has risen from the dead, never to die again? Jesus looks so weak, doesn't he? What good is a God who dies on a cross, the world thinks? But through this supposed weakness, God's power was made perfect. More importantly, through this supposed weakness, God's grace was made perfect. Through a humble life and death, Jesus won for us forgiveness, salvation, and life in heaven. And that simply is enough. There is nothing more we could ever want or need. When we have those family problems, when we're struggling with money, when we are sick and we're tired of struggles and troubles, when we're weary from battling sin, from living in this world, God is there with a loving embrace saying, "My grace is sufficient for you." And if that's clearly the case, what else exactly matters? If we suffer, if we have troubles, if we are weak, in all things we are reminded whom to rely on, whom to lean on. Paul says, "Therefore I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in my weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong." We have a reason to brag this morning. We have a reason to boast in this world. Not about ourselves, not about our achievements, but the fact that we are all weak, but Christ has made us strong by making us his children. I said on more than one occasion today, enough is enough. If you find yourself saying that today, that you've had enough, you're absolutely right. God's grace is enough, and you have it. God's grace is all we need to endure, and praise be to God for giving us enough. And now we go full circle back to my quote from those philosophers, the Rembrandts, in their well-known song, where they quite rightly say that sometimes it hasn't been your day, your week, your month, or even your year. There are other lyrics in the song that are not so well known, and I believe they've absolutely nailed it. "No one could ever know me. No one could ever see me. Seems you're the only one who knows what it's like to be me. Someone to face the day with, make it through all the rest with. Someone I'll always laugh with. Even at my worst, I'm best with you." Whoever knew that the Rembrandts would have such an incredible words to a song that might tell us something about our faith? When I was starting to pull together my thoughts for this week, I was listening to Simon and Ellen singing the song Cornerstone. And it all sums up what I've been saying. Those words in the song, "When darkness seems to hide his face, I trust on his unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil." When we are weak, then we are truly strong. Amen.